million that we actually had budgeted to spend. And when factoring spending on capital expenditure, we're sitting at a 5% underspend, which is fairly in line with the spending that we set ourselves to do. Government grants received, we received an additional about 10 million from DAWs, which we allocated for the implementation of the, which we allocated to capital expenditure. And other income, we're also reporting and getting 3 million above what we already budgeted, what we originally budgeted for. And this is due to additional investment income that we received from funds that have been invested, and then also additional income that for the revenue that we self-generate. And when then we come to spending, it is important to note that we also are reporting about 4.5% projected underspend, which shows the fact that we are actually spending most of the money that we've been allocating to our funds and subsidies at 26% lower than what we budgeted for. The variance is due to the lower inflow of claims on estimated settlements and awarded cases by the bargaining council. We also are reporting a capital expenditure variance that is lower because of some of our procurement of furniture service providers could not deliver as we ordered. When we talk about our financial viability, we are fairly comfortable as reported by as reported by our balance sheet of the financial position. We're sitting comfortably at a ratio of 1.1 asset ratio, and we're sitting at a cash balance of 89 million. What is important for us to note with this cash balance is that what we then disclosed as a retention of surplus to National Treasury was only 21,000. So what we are actually, after spending, having cash left over that we are reporting to National Treasury is only 21,000. This shows that we literally are utilizing all the funds that we are receiving from DAW. This continues to highlight and give us evidence to the fact that we have a challenge of the tight budget allocation, and we are doing everything that we can to find alternative revenue generation means to augment the budget. It will of course not help to have, you know, additional allocation coming from the fiscus. But from us, this is what we are reporting as contained in the annual financial statement of our annual report for this year. Thank you.
Members? Thanks, Chairman. I appreciate the report. And also, of course, the PMA for the 15% performance goal. But when you look at slide 15, not any case is reflected that we have made incomplete and they resolve 10, so it cannot be 100%. Correct that. And also, you have the slide 15, which speaks to 100% performance. But right below that, you have a slide 16, which talks to complaints that you are receiving around commissioners, which are cited as being bias, forcing parties to settle the so-called business. How reliable then is their performance if people are raising these issues about them? Are you happy as CCMA if you have people who say we have resolved everything, and we also have that long list of complaints against them. Is it forced settlement or what? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tolios. Honorable Amir.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's echo the sentiments expressed by my colleague with regard to your performance, Mr. Mariana, and the team. Well done. Just one question I'd like to ask in terms of your financial statement. Program 1, administration, and if one look at the compensation of employees have increased, whereas for the other programs it is marginally over budget, and in some cases it's just in fact below budget. What is the reason for that? And I know in the global figure it is more or less within your budgetary framework. So maybe there was a need to appoint more people within certain sections. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the correction.
Chair, thank you very much. The executive director of Netlet, Chair, indicated to me that she is not feeling well. He is here, and he is going to ask Ms. Lisa to do the presentation. And he is assisting taking the session, but he's not feeling well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Members of the Portfolio Committee, DM of the Friend of Labour, colleague, good morning. My name, it's not morning anymore. Good afternoon. My name is Nobuntu Sidisi. I'm the new head of program operations at NEDLEC. The NEDLEC team, as it has been introduced by the DG, perhaps I'd like to also introduce my colleague, Didi Malo, who is the new communications coordinator at NEDLEC. The work of NEDLEC is undertaken under three programs, which is administration, cooperation, constituency capacity building fund. And in terms of the work that we've done, 67% of achievement of targets was achieved in administration, 85% on cooperation, 100% on constituency building fund, and overall the entity achieved 80% of the set targets. I will dwell on the reasons for not achieving the targets, those that were not achieved, later during the presentation. And NEDLEC also concluded 10 policy and legislation, I mean 10 pieces of legislation and policy in terms of the NEDLEC protocol. So the protocol stipulates that all policies and pieces of legislation that are tabled at NEDLEC should be concluded within 6 months. So the slides, those two slides indicate the period of engagement on those policies. And 6 of them were achieved within the set target, and 4 were achieved outside the 6 month period. NEDLEC also held 10 special sessions on policy issues, and those were undertaken under the Chambers of Public Finance and Monetary Policy, Labour Market, Trade and Industry, and MANCO and Project. research chamber. And then in terms of the sessions that were held under public finance and monetary policy, those included the engagement on medium-term budget policy statement and the sessions with the tax ombudsman on its role and its challenges. And also we've worked with FinMark on financial inclusion. We've also had a session on employment tax incentive and decent work. Decent Work Country Program was sessions were undertaken by the Labour Market Chamber, and there were also engagements with Productivity SA and the Commission for Employment Equity. And the Trade and Industry Chamber looked at the challenges in the dairy sector, as you may be aware, in terms of the influx or dumping of milk from EU, which is causing a challenge for our local producers. So the Chamber looked at those issues, and the work is continuing under the task team in this current financial year. And there were engagement also on localization of Productivity SA, and the Manco project looked at the financial sector engagement. And perhaps if I can just add on the engagement in regard to the financial sector. Arising from those engagements, there was a decision that NEDLAC would host a financial sector summit in this current financial year. And noting the budgetary constraints as well, that decision was further supported by the fact that external funding should be sourced from outside, and as a result, it has been secured from the Standard Bank as one of the funders for this project. And then five research projects were also concluded through the chambers, and being a research on Operation Pachisa, focusing on the ocean's economy, and that was undertaken by the Development Chamber. And then the Public Finance and Policy and Monetary Policy Chamber concluded the research on the impact of Employment Tax Incentive Act, and the Trade and Industry concluded two research reports there, one focusing on AGOA and the other focusing on the World Trade Organization Trade in Services Agreement to basically formulate a position for the country in terms of the agreements, those agreements. And then the last piece of research or research report was concluded by the Labour Market Chamber, and that focused on the Code of Good Practice on Collective Bargaining, Industrial Action, and Picketing. And then also, one of the mandates of NEDLAC is to conclude or consider the Section 77 applications in terms of the protocol and also of the Labour Relations Act. And in this regard, we received 9 applications, of which 5 of them were concluded, and 9 of them, the work is still continuing. And if I can highlight those that were concluded, 2 of them were lodged by COSATU, one by AMCU, and another one by NUM, and the 5th issue that was concluded was lodged by NUMSA. And those that are still in progress relate to the application that's lodged by COSATU again in respect to free higher education in South Africa, and another one by ICTU on economic policy, national minimum wage and free education, and another notice that was submitted by FEDUSA on the lack of competency on the leadership of the state-owned enterprises, and the last one which was also lodged by COSATU regarding the water crisis in the Western Cape. So those 4 are still in progress. That's still being considered in the current financial year. In terms of the achievements that we had in the last financial year, is that we obtained an unqualified audit opinion. However, that was with a material finding. And you may perhaps recall that over the past 2 financial years, we obtained qualified audit opinion. So in this regard, we take this as an achievement. However, there is room for improvement, obviously, given that we had some findings that were raised by the AG. I will also talk briefly about some of the measures that we have in place to address those. And we have also convened during the last financial year the Future of Work workshop in partnership with the ILO, the International Labour Organization. And the National Minimum Wage Agreement was also signed by the social partners, and we've also established a high-level task team on the comprehensive social security. And so that work of the on the comprehensive social security is also continuing in the current financial year. And perhaps if I can just add also on the national minimum wage, the engagements are still continuing to look at the legislation in order to be able to implement the national minimum wage by the first deadline in May next year. And Chair, if I can perhaps indicate that we have noticed in terms of the presentation that we've submitted to you that we did not include the challenges. So what I'm going to talk about now is on the challenges that we have added on the action plan and on the presentation, including the remedial action that has been implemented in this regard. If we look at the challenges on non-achievement of targets in Program 1, most of them related to the secure backup of data. So in this regard, neglected to obtain an off-site backup to ensure that our documents are stored outside the network in case of any mishaps. And in this regard, one of the options that was explored was to secure the services of the CETA. And however, this option could not materialize given that it was too expensive and we didn't have budget for it. The cost for this off-site backup was about 650,000 per annum, and we therefore eventually had to explore an alternative of securing another service provider, and which managed to conduct the work at a cost of 120,000. And that was therefore concluded in quarter four. That means in the first three quarters we could not upload our data off-site. Perhaps that's primarily some of the reasons for not achieving the targets under Program 1. And also under Program 2, most of the targets that were not achieved were those that I've reported that relate to the consideration and finalization of network reports on draft legislation within the set period of time. One of those was the network report on public holidays versus religious and cultural holidays. And this was tabled at the Development Chamber in 2015 by the Commission for the Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities. And in terms of consideration of this document, the task team noted that there was no socioeconomic impact assessment that was provided that would enable it to make informed decisions when engaging on this document. And therefore, the commission was requested to provide that document, which is the CS report. And some time lapsed while waiting for the commission to submit the report, and eventually the task team agreed to close the matter and request the commission to table the amended document with the CS when it is ready to do so. And another issue was on the financial sector regulations bill that also could not be concluded within the set period of 6 months. And in this regard, the challenge was during the engagement, government requested to go back and engage within itself or internally to revise the bill and then resubmit it to the task team. However, when government tabled the document, the revised document, that 6 month engagement period had lapsed. So that's another reason for not achieving that target. And other challenges that we've experienced as an institution is that we had a challenge of lack of human resources, and this was exacerbated by the resignation of senior members of the entity, namely the head of program operations, the supply chain coordinator, the senior coordinator of TIC, and also coordinator for communication as well. However, happy to mention that all four positions have been filled. The work of the entity is continuing as planned. And also another remedial action is that there are options that are being explored to establish benefits for staff, such as pension funds and medical aid, and we're hoping by having those benefits, we will reduce the rate of resignations by the members of the staff. And another issue which also relates to what was raised earlier by Honorable Bahrain relating to fraud cases, perhaps I can touch on that as well, that it's one of the challenges that we have experienced as an institution in regarding the delays in the finalization of the court cases against the alleged parties. In this regard, a court case was lodged with South African Police Services, and also management is continuously following up with NPA as per the resolution of ESCO. And with the response that we have received from NPA is that they are still busy with investigations to ascertain whether they can institute prosecutions on the alleged parties. And another challenge that we've recorded there is, while it's also I've also reported it as an achievement, and I've mentioned there's room for improvement, of course, because our unqualified audit opinion came with material audit findings by AG. And in this regard, we have developed an action plan, and that action plan is being implemented. And if I can just touch on the action plan, particularly on issues relating to financial misstatements, which were also raised earlier by honorable member, is that management has implemented the SCM process to appoint service providers who provide services to the constituencies, and that those services are covered for in terms of funding by Program 3, which is Constituency Capacity Building Fund. And in this regard, NEDLAC now pays the service providers directly rather than transferring funds into the constituency's bank account. So in the last financial year, what NEDLAC was doing was that the constituencies would identify programs and service providers and give us the invoices, and then we would then pay the funds into the constituencies' bank account. Now we will no longer be doing that. Instead, we will follow the supply chain management processes and pay the service providers directly. And also, another issue is that we have now amended the procurement checklist so that we ensure that all the service providers that we appoint are registered with the CSD. And another challenge which was also raised earlier here was relating to the inaccuracies in terms of the leave provision. And that was primarily due to the fact that we were managing our leave manually in terms of completing the forms and then capturing the leave on the system. However, now we have implemented an integrated HR and payroll management electronic system, and that will ensure that all information relating to leave is recorded accurately and is reported as such on the financial statement. And we have also now undertaken fixed asset verification on an annual basis, and the deviation management process has been improved by amending the deviation peg checklist to ensure that all deviations are recorded accurately and are complete. And we've developed a satisfaction rating form, which is used by user departments to monitor and rate services rendered by contracted service providers. And perhaps if I can touch on this issue, that the issue that was raised by the auditors was that we could not provide evidence that the service providers that we are utilizing provided value. So this will be used as one of the tools to ensure that we can account and be able to indeed say that we've derived value from the service providers that we've contracted. And we ask, management is developing a methodology to ensure that the proper process of revaluing assets and reassessment of useful life and residual values is followed. Just to come now to the financials of the entity, the NEDLAC has received income from a grant from the Department of Labor, and that was about 30,800,000. And we've also derived interest from our investment of 420,000 and salary income of 132,000. And in total, our income was 31,369,000 rand for the last financial year. Oh, sorry, a million. then in terms of the, so it's 31 million, not 31,000, apologies. The allocation of the budget is that 21 million was allocated to program one, and to program two, 6.4 million, and program three, 3.9 million. And in terms of the expenditure, we've got the graph there on screen with the blue showing the budgeted expenditure versus the actuals, which is represented by that red bar there. And on program one, you may notice that the budget was 21 million. However, the entity spent 23.8 million, and so there was overspent on program one, and there was also overspent on over expenditure on program two, whereby the allocated budget was 6.4 million, and the actual expenditure was 7.4 million. And then on program three, the budgeted amount was 3.9 million and there was under expenditure of 3.3 million in that program. And if I can perhaps outline the reasons for both overachievement in program one and two and that underachievement in program three, is that under program one, the overachievement was largely due to the activities in terms of the national minimum wage, and that also impacted on the corporations, which is the program two. And there was also an increase in expenditure relating to security services that we had to procure, as well as audit fees. And under program two, the over expenditure also, in addition to the work of national minimum wage, also resulted from the increase in cost of research projects that are undertaken by four chambers. And under program three, there is under expenditure, which was largely due to the implementation of cost containment measures, and also that some of the actual costs were less than initially estimated, so we managed to negotiate with the service providers in that regard. And going forward, in this current financial year, we have the set priorities to enhance financial management, and that will enhance risk management systems and compliance, and also that will seek additional funding in order to address the issue of underfunded projects which are undertaken by NEDLAC, and also to effectively implement the audit and action, the audit action plan. And other priorities include that I will enhance communication and outreach, which would entail forming strategic partnerships with other communicators and help and forging healthy relationships with the media. And the national minimum wage, while a lot of work has been done, this remains one of the key deliverables for NEDLAC. And as mentioned earlier, that the task teams again are working to ensure that the legislation is finalized come the set implementation date in May next year. And we are also prioritizing the comprehensive social security, which still form part of NEDLAC's work, and to ensure that all South Africans who are currently outside the security net are covered. And substantially, we need to advance the engagement on the work of national health insurance, and we also would continue with the consideration of Section 77 notices in line with the NEDLAC protocol and the Code of Good Practice. And then in terms of human resources, priorities is that NEDLAC seeks to improve the capacity of the NEDLAC secretariat and to attract and retain highly skilled staff to carry out the mandate of the entity, and also to build the capacity, the research capacity of the institution, and in line with the recommendations that were provided by ILO through the research which was commissioned by the Department of Labour. Thank you very much, Chair. The team will assist in terms of taking any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the honourable.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let's welcome the report. We said comment that you do 9 good things and want to do 1, which is not right. It spoils the 9 good things. The greater part of your presentation was oral, especially on the area of challenges. And that's the actual area where I think as a committee we're supposed to engage. So make sure that we do get that input, because it's not part of what you have given us. I'm also noting that you are citing national minimum wage processes as one of the reasons for your over expenditure. I just want to express a view then that this issue of national minimum wage dates back to 2014. Was it then not carelessness that you did not budget for it to an extent that you overspent? Because you could have seen the trend in 2015, so that if it needed more money, you increased your budget. So maybe when it's time to respond, you'll convince us more. But where I'm seated, I'm not convinced that national minimum wage brought about your over expenditure. Thank you,
Chair. Questions from the members? No questions. Chair? No, you don't have any hand up. Is there a hand up? I didn't see your hand.
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My question is that your regular spending of 3.6 million rand that can directly be linked to the over expenditure on the national minimum wage process. Have that regular expenditure been condoned by the Treasury? And secondly, there are internal controls deficiencies within the NEDLAC process, and we know that the reason for the establishment of NEDLAC is that parties need to seek consensus on matters that affect service delivery, legislation, etc. So So with the non-compliance of your own protocols, do you still think that NEDLAC, fulfill that particular role? And one gets a sense also, although there's an improvement in audit outcomes, is that perhaps due to the managerial sort of transition within NEDLAC, that there's not a very tight sort of management of the institution. And I know it is now many months after the annual report and annual financial statements, but do you consider it as a serious matter that you need to comply with your protocols? You need to stay within budget, you need to provide a platform that's conducive for the expedition of matters that serve before you, where parties can feel free to engage and eventually reach consensus. Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's the time for responses. You are?
We still have productivity supper.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Still like productivity say.
Chapter 7. Nearly got scotch free. I'm saying we nearly got scotch free.
They only give you the age, that's all I think.
Chairperson and honourable members, good afternoon. We submitted the presentation that talks to how we are located within the mandate of the department, and I think the DG has expressed himself on that. I would just like the committee to look at slide number 20. Which gives the overall performance of the entity. Slide 12, please. If you look at that slide, we set ourselves to perform in terms of 7 strategic objectives with 41 key performance indicators. And 28 of those indicators were achieved, and 13 not achieved. When we look at that slide again, I just want to reflect on a few things. Our main challenge in terms of performance is on strategic objective number 3, which actually is the core business of productivity SA, which talks to support to companies facing economic distress. You would realize that out of the 8 indicators that we planned there, none was achieved. Again, below that, in terms of strategic objective 4, I'm sorry, we had an indicator that talks to jobs saved in depressed companies. That indicator was not achieved. So effectively, if you look at the 13 indicators that we set ourselves, 9 of them were in one program and they were not achieved. And I'll qualify that when I go into the report. I would then like to take the committee to slide 13. Slide 13 talks to a comparative analysis. I think we had the benefit of looking at what we were performing of our rate of performance in the 1560 financial year. We were almost a 36% performer, that is of the 42 targets that we had set ourselves then, we could only achieve 15. And if you look at 16, 17 of the 41 targets that we set ourselves, we achieved 28. So we moved from 36% performance to 68. And should it not have been because of that strategic objective number 3 and 4, where we're talking about support to companies facing economic distress, where we had 8 indicators and 1 indicator. If we had, because there, you'd, if you look at slide 25, you would find that should we have had the money that we planned on, that is the money from UIF, as they indicated, they were supposed to have given us 97 million, they only gave us 24 million. So there wasn't much that we could do. However, what we then did, I would like to take the committee to slide 15 just to give an indication of what subsequently happened. When we realized that we could not get the money that we were to receive, that is 97.8, we had two options. One option was to cut on the program. And now, if you cut on the program, you're sitting with a challenge. You have the economy retrenching workers. So just to try and mitigate that, we just looked at the money at that disposal, which was 24 million, and asked ourselves, what can we do with 24 million against 97 million? And we realized that we could at least target 33 companies. So with that amount, at least we're able to assist 49 companies. So if one was to discount the fact that we didn't receive all the money that we expected, and just looked at the 33 companies that we planned after having received 24 million, one would have come to the committee and said, overall performance of productivity as A would have moved from 768 to 88%. But because we report on the APP, it's just important to say we planned so much. However, we did not get the money that we were expecting to get. But with the little that we had, this is what we did. Over and above that, the other thing that I think I would have to reflect to the committee is issues relating to strategic objective number 5, still on slide number 12. We planned to have 6 reports, sector reports. We could only do 5, and the one that we did not achieve has to do with the statistics report. The challenge there was that because of financial constraints, we couldn't appoint a chief economist. We held back on filling our vacancies, and that's why we had the discrepancy. We have resolved that issue. We have now appointed the chief economist, and we don't think that that challenge would recur in the 17-18 financial year. So that slide 12, Chairperson, summarizes the performance of productivity SA. In terms of just specific areas where we fail to perform, if the committee goes to slide number 19, slide number 19 is very specific. There's just one area there where we did not perform. It has to do with number of media articles published. We planned 395. We could only do 316. We missed the target by 79. And because a lot of work, this program supports also the turnaround solutions program. To that effect, we could not also finalize work in that area because of lack of funding. The next area of challenge is more around slide 25, 26, and 27, I think I've explained myself in detail. It's more around the work that we do in turnaround solutions. To that extent, Chair, I will stop here in terms of performance and request the CFO, Dr. Sabela, to look at slides 42 up to 44 in terms of financial performance as well as our response to the audit space. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Chairperson, honorable members, good afternoon. I'll share with you basically the summation in terms of the financial perspective of performance. As you will notice, we have about four revenue streams, of which 90% of them are non-exchange revenues. I'll start with the bottom line, that says total income. We have underperformed in terms of collection revenues. We've achieved, we're sitting at a negative 49%. There's 96 against a budget of 191. Now, if you look at the areas where we fell short, well, the grants from UIF, if you can just explain the meaning of that number, the 80%, we had a plan or a target to save about 10,000 jobs. We had a plan to assist about 200 companies that are in distress. Due to funding, lack of funding, it was received, however late, and not in full. We could not service those companies. We could not save those jobs. We could only save about 4,000 of them, as the CE alluded to that. So in terms of numbers, we were out of budget by 80% due to the fact that only 24 was received against a plan of 97. Another area where we fell short is other income, 76%. Again, that relates to the UIF companies that you assist that are struggling. 2 years ago, the MOA, the agreement that we had with UIF, was such that they will fund 65%, and the company that is being assisted would also contribute 35% to the fee that PSA charges. However, it became very clear that the companies that are being assisted are not in a position to afford the 35%, which was their side of the bill. I guess one of the obvious reasons was the fact that they are economically distressed, they are struggling companies. So the two entities took a decision, a business decision, to stop charging the companies that have been assisted with 35%. However, the decision came at a time where budgets were already concluded. As a result, we say our budget then are a bit overstated because we stopped charging our clients as the agreement. Overall, that resulted to a 94 million under collection of revenues. I'll then move to the next slide. This slide talks to two things. One, it highlights our operational expenditure. And then again, it also talks to, again, the bottom line, and it shows the deficit. In terms of the employment cost or compensation of employees, we were actually overspent in that area. The budget that we have was 59 million. The actual expenditure was 61 million. The reason for expenditure there, as the entity, we are carrying a cost that is relating to the post-retirement medical aid benefit that, I guess, the entity or the new management inherited. Now, this expenditure is not on budget, as we are still seeking a legal opinion as to whether we are actually liable or do we have any document that says we have to pay these benefits to employees that they are now in retirement. So that expenditure is sitting at 3 million rand, and we have overspent as a result of that. the goods and services are underspent, and that's because the work that was supposed to be done in terms of assisting companies that are in distress test was not done. So goods and services or funds thereof, conducting fees were or cost were not spent as a result. We had to write off some receivables, the money that is owed to Productivity SA by our customers. Our customers, basically, we didn't have a quality that has broke with customers that are struggling economically. They were not able to pay us back. Albeit us trying all sort of means, writing letters of demand to them, we could not make any progress in that regard. So we approached our audit and risk committee with a view of writing off the receivables. They were approved. As a result, we then realized a deficit of about 12.1 million. The total figure that we had to write off was 12.7 million. So the financial year end, we posted a deficit of 12.1 million. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As it is stated that Productivity South Africa is not audited by the AG's office in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, so I don't know how one could, you know, place absolute reliance on what has been presented to us. But I want to refer back to a previous engagement with Productivity South Africa with the challenge of the transfers from the UIF and hence the difficulty in implementing the turnaround solutions. At that engagement, it was stated possible reasons as to why the delay in the transfer of the funds did not occur in time. And I know that, you know, perhaps this is not the correct time, that a particular investigation was to be conducted in terms of the concerns raised by Productivity South Africa by the UIF in terms of the delay in the transfer of funds. I'm happy to hear that subsequently some of the funds were transferred. It is regrettable that it was not on time to save the number of identified jobs in the annual plan. However, you know, as the financials clearly indicate, that the entity, Productivity South Africa, is technically insolvent, they need to close shop, and it will be regrettable if they do, because the projects that we have visited where they partner with the stress industries indicate to us that there is a need and relevance for its existence. And there's been sort of management challenges in terms of staff turnover, instability. We hope that you have managed to address those matters. And then lastly, in terms of the, because you obviously have financial challenges, that you, in terms of, you know, you are, you know, obligated to pay post-retirement medical aid subsidies to ex-employees, and you have undertaken to conduct an investigation whether you are still obligated to pay those sort of subsidies. Have you completed that, and what was the outcome? Because certainly if you're no longer obligated to do that, will certainly improve your financial fortunes. Other than that, Madam Chair, I think that, you know, Productivity South Africa has the role, an important role. We have our unemployment rate, and if we could obviate further job losses, and it is to be welcomed. Thank you.
How much of that 24 million that you have used? You've done a good job, but just want to know how much of it. Thank you. There is no other entity now. DM, DG, and then the entities in response to the questions in that order. The specific questions to you.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think as a ministry, we appreciate the opportunity that has been given to us to be part of this engagement. It is truly illuminating, and I believe we've missed out a lot by not being part of these exchanges and interactions for the past few years. Regarding your question about what have we been doing as a department to ensure that the action plans or advices that have been given to us by the AG, well, we do meet on a regular basis in the form of the ministry committee with the senior management of the department. But you have been meeting basically on a quarterly basis, and some of the issues are involved and of a long-term nature, in the sense that there are a number of things that need to be done in order for some outcome to be realized. We decided now that these meetings of the management committee will be held on a monthly basis so that you are seriously on top of the situation, because we are concerned about the deterioration of the performance of the department generally and some of the entities. And it has been our resolve now that we will be much more hands-on than we have been, so that some of these issues of concern we are indeed on top of them. Now, regarding the issues raised by Mr. Kafrain, well, I think indeed that he had directed his concern to me. This is a policy matter. They require all of us to try and be of one vision. The laws that we implement as the Department of Labor are laws that emanate at the end of the day from Parliament. And if any of us discover that there are people who are deliberately and unjustifiably undermining them, then it's their responsibility as leaders and citizens to bring that to the attention of the authorities, either in the form of the Department of Labor and its relevant entities and branches, or the police and other enforcement agencies. So I would encourage, therefore, that if there are people who come across such situations, they must do the measures that highlight them to us as ordinary people do. If ordinary people find that some people are being given a disservice in our labor center, they inform us and we take immediate action. The amount that has been recovered by the department on behalf of our clients have been covered recovered also because we have had people who raised it with us. The question of the national minimum wage, which Mr. Bahrain seems to have reservations about is a matter that has been exercising the mind of this portfolio committee. I imagine since 2014, a number of engagements have been had with relevant stakeholders, business and labor, and I imagine civil society. The same exercise has been undertaken under the auspices of NEDLAC to the extent that some agreement has been reached, which now the constituencies of social partners in NEDLAC are busy working on the production of the law that we intend to have with your help, naturally, and NEDLAC for implementation in May 2018. So there's still an opportunity, therefore, for people to raise whatever views they have about the direction that we're taking. As a country, we committed ourselves to the decent work agenda, and among other things, that is about ensuring that no one is exploited by anyone, and that the people who are employed, they get all the benefits that are due to the people, especially the vulnerable, who have to rely on government to ensure that their rights are not violated. So I appreciate, therefore, also the point made that some of these problems, in fact, are not the doing of the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor is doing what it can in the resources that it has, human and financial. So, as I say, we appreciate the ministry's action, and I hope that more and more will be invited to participate. So that I know that we also have some responsibilities to execute the laws and policies that we will pass here. Sometimes we find that our times for interaction are not aligned, and sometimes we find that we are not able to come. But the minister has taken position that whenever possible, if she's not available, I have to be available. But both of us, me and the minister, are supposed to be. And by letting him tell her family, but if you would allow me, I have an emergency of a personal nature that I have to attend to. I was hoping that I'd be able to stay until the end of the session.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to continue from where the DM left us. Some of the questions that were raised by Honorable Agrain have been responded to by the Deputy Minister with Deputy Minister and Ms. Puzi and Mr. Mafata when they were doing their presentation. There's a question on the SIU investigation, which is also reflected in the AG's report. This investigation was completed, and we were asked to pay for the investigation. We paid for the investigation. We have not received the report, and the report was submitted to the presidency, and we're still waiting for the report from our side. We were told that the report is not going to be given to us, because it's the president who made the proclamation, and therefore the report must go to the president first. I'm going to ask the compensation commissioner to deal specifically with his, the cases that were not investigated, or those are still outstanding investigations that we have. The issue relating to low placement, and I think low placement is a function of the current kinds of skills that we have skills of the people that we have on our database versus the opportunities that are registered. And we can only place that which meets the requirement as per the requirements of the employers or the job opportunities. And this is something that we concerned about as well. And that's why we have the MOU with the Department of Higher Education and Training, so that we can provide skills training to the people that we have on our database, besides the training of the UIF beneficiaries. Again, the issue relating to decent employment creation, sometimes, Chairperson and honorable members, our focus when we talk about decent employment is on wages. I think that decent employment goes beyond just the wages. It talks about how employees are treated by their employers. And that's why we have legislation such as the Occupational Health and Safety to make sure that people work in decent environments, and salary or wages is just but one of those key elements of decent decent work. We take the point that recovered funds are indeed a drop in an ocean, but at least we're happy that those who have approached us as a department, they leave knowing very well that we will do something about their complaints. And that's what we're trying to reflect, that any system is as effective as its ability to respond to whatever challenges that are put in front of it. And I think that our employment service, our client service officers and our inspectors are responding very well to these complaints, and that's why we're able to recover the money that we've recovered. The top six, they're merely chosen from the list of the sectors that we've inspected, and we looked at all the sectors and the data generated indicated to us that indeed these are the companies that that have more degrees of non-compliance. The issue only relating to the 4,747 inspected, these were just the DG reviews. These are just the designated employers that are designated in terms of the employment equity, and mainly your JSE listed companies. So that's, we focused on those companies. But also there's a second type of inspection relating to employment equity, which is an inspection that relates to, or that focus only on, solely on procedural issues. The law the law compels companies to, for instance, establish consultative forums. And that's why it's important that we look at procedural issues, because they are provided for in the law, and in our reporting we're trying to categorize those and have DG reviews and also the inspections relating to that aspect. The strikes, what is it that we're doing? I think the presentation that was done by the CCMA reflected what is it that we're doing to reduce the number of strikes. And I think that the CCMA has registered quite significant successes with regards to limiting the number of prolonged strikes. We do have increase in terms of occurrences, but I think the time that the strikes are now taking is not as long as it was. And I think that that's also a very, very important achievement. So the CCMA is working tirelessly to make sure that, if possible, parties don't even think about strikes. And if you read the industrial action report, it takes a picture of a global situation where both employers and unions they don't take serious they don't take serious negotiations, and secondly, you know, it's easy to just go on strike. And when you come back from the negotiation table, in instances employers revert to the initial demand by the unions and give them that, but they've allowed them to go on strike, which is very you know, surprising things. And in certain instances, workers would demand 10%, instead of offer 5%, they go on strike, come back, and settle at 5%. So those are the things that we need to make sure that we engage our social partners so that we don't do, or we don't take decisions that have a dire impact on the on the workers, given the levels of poverty that we have. The 60 years, well, I'm told that 60 years now is a new 40. So we still have to find employment opportunities for people who are 60 years. And I think that very soon we'll have a demographic challenge in South Africa, just like in Europe, where people don't age as fast as they used to in the past because of advance in terms of medicines and technology, and people taking care of themselves. So even in the department, we have people who are over 60 years, and they are going to go around 65. And you can see they're still very strong. If we were to say they can go at 70, they will welcome that. We've observed the regression, even though we have functional oversight structures in the department. And some of these issues are as a result of, for instance, if you take the compensation fund, we accept the fact that given the challenges that we've had there over years, it's going to be impossible for us to resolve those things overnight. And that is why we, in developing the action plan, we had long-term and short-term goals. And on the short-term goals, at least we have managed to achieve those, 83% of those. And we're now working on the long-term goals. And secondly, we will be engaging with AGN National Treasury to look at how we can resolve historical, you know, issues that even though we're working on improving the way we do things, they still have a negative impact. And if we don't get some condonation from National Treasury on these issues, we will not be able to comply, and AG will always find us wanting. And that's why we have to. We have a meeting that will be set up with AG and the National Treasury, so that we can resolve some of these things. And we do make sure that in instances where management has failed, we do implement consequence management. It may not be as severe as other people would want it to be, because we still think that consequence management, I mean, discipline is also a it's not supposed to be punitive all the time. It's a corrective measure, and some of these things will take time. But we're all committed to make sure that we have clean audits, and we're working towards that. I think the issue of the audit panel on UIF and compensation fund on the investment, I think Ms. Kuzi has indicated clearly what has been the challenge there. I'm going to ask I'm going to ask Compensation Fund to deal with the outstanding historic cases. The slide 16, which deals with the money that we've recovered, 1.3 million, this is money that the courts have levied
against the employers who did not comply with employment equity legislation. When we do these reviews, we hand over recommendations to companies that are not complying, and when they fail to act on those recommendations, we then take them to court, and we plead with the court to levy the highest penalty possible, and in some instances, courts agree with us and they impose the penalty. We do get feedback from the courts, and that's why we're able to say. We were able to mention the 1.3 million, and they do take time to get these matters resolved, and that is why in the new dispensation post the national minimum wage, we're now talking about engaging the CCMA to make sure that issues of non-compliance that are picked up by inspectors are dealt with by the CCMA, and the compliance order issued by inspectors endorsed by the CCMA will carry the same weight as an order of the court. So we still have to engage the CCMA and make sure that they will have the resources for them to be able to do that, because that will be a huge task and on top of what they currently are doing. Well, the unemployment, yes, is increasing, but what we were reporting on, we were reporting on the information as at the 31st of March 2017, and subsequently to that, the unemployment has increased to 27.7%. I think that we agree that, I mean, with regards to these investments, there's a need for us to do oversight. And I'm happy that there's a pending meeting that I must have with Dr. Machila, who's the CEO of the PIC, and we specifically want to be talking about how we make sure that there's monitoring on our side as well, the compensation fund and UIF. We will indeed submit the action plan of the UIF with regards to how we're going to deal with this matter. In fact, both the UIF and the compensation fund. One of the irregularities with regards to Productivity South Africa that UIF referred to. I think that previously we have shared this information with the committee that when the new CEO came in and he was seized with the situation that the unemployment insurance fund is not transferring money to Productivity South Africa, he then with UIF had to dig deeper to understand what the situation, and they picked up that there were a number of things that were not in accordance with the MOA between the UIF and the compensation fund. And interestingly, the more they dig deeper, the more they realize that we have serious issues. And they both agreed that we need to have a forensic investigation done there, which is where we are currently. And the investigation is almost complete. And once we get the recommendations of that investigation, we'll then act on that. But in the meantime, we have dealt with all other issues. We've set up proper governance structures. There's much more better accounting, now, and that's why we were able to release the funding to Productivity South Africa. And we're going to continue doing so, but we're not going to be reckless. If some of the accounting responsibilities are not being discharged properly, we will not give Productivity South Africa money, because that will be reckless of us. It will go against the good governance that we are advocating.
I think I'm going to ask the commissioner and the other colleagues to talk about some of these issues, including the NEDLAC with regards to why are they using the national minimum wage as a reason for over-expenditure. So I'm going to ask the compensation commissioner, Chairperson, if you agree to respond to the questions raised.
I'm sure that they will only respond to questions that were not posed to the deputy minister and yourself, those that you have not responded to. But one question for me, DJ. You have a change. Your guards at the top level, the compensation fund, UIF, and many of them to get the required results, or at least department to go to the right direction. Do you think that the lower level, the subordinate to the new good people that you have appointed at the level, they are good. Do you think is it the same way down there? Have they been able to change the modus operandi in terms of working or style of working? Because if you have such good people on top and you still have, minor mistakes down there, like your PIC that you're talking about. I mean, those are the question of the PIC. And then the IT systems not talking to the business as identified by AG, and that has different results. Do you see some willingness to work according to the new style? I'm saying new style because when you're removed a leadership or you've changed around there and put people with certain qualities, people that when you brought to the committee were approved, but you still see some dragging of the feet down there that make you to result or make the results to be different. Like the question of internal auditors as well that I've spoken to, recommendations are given to the management. In fact, all the Auditor General's office were blind because they asked, I don't agree with your rating of your internal auditors, the internal auditors and the audit committee, because they are good work of the results that you see. They don't talk to they are not changing anything as they are saying. So if they were so good, then they said, no, we do give recommendations. We sit down with them. But the management is not coming to the party.
So that's why I'm saying, looking at the subordinates of this team, what's going on?
Thank you, Chair. This is a good observation that you're making, which we've also made. We're saying now that we have dealt with the with issues at a top level, we're now picking up that whatever good things that we do at the highest level do not permeate through to the lower levels. So we're beginning to say now that our focus should be at the lower levels. One of the biggest challenges that we've had, especially at the compensation fund, was the failure to do change management. When you change processes, you can't just wake up in the morning and say, I'm changing everything, and think that everybody will fall in line with what you're saying. And you, Chairperson, you spoke about the culture of the organization. And if you have a culture of an organization that that says, before I process claims, if I had 20 claims to process during the eight hours that I'm paid to do so, and I don't do that, I then take 5 out of that 10 and process it after 4, and then I claim over time, then it's a different culture, it's a different environment. And if you get used to that, and then all of a sudden you are told that the 10 that is allocated to you, you shall do it within the 8 hours that you pay, and there will be no overtime. Obviously, it's going to have negative impact on these colleagues financially, and they will then drag their feet because there's no source of income now to supplement what they were getting previously. I'll give you an example. When we had the SCOPA committee at the compensation fund, we were doing rounds. There was one official who had a spaza shop, was operating a spaza shop at the compensation fund. Now, what is of interest to me is not his conduct, but what was interesting was that his spaza shop is just opposite the office of legal services. Now, these are people who are supposed to say to us, this is how you comply with the law. And yet they saw something there and they didn't do anything about it. So I was saying to the commissioner, in as much as we're going to discipline this one, we need to do something to the head of legal services, because these are people sitting right across his office. So we do have issues at the lower level that we need to address. And I'm happy that the compensation fund has a total complement of senior management at the top, and their responsibility now is to make sure that at the lower levels things are done properly. We take them along so that they understand the changes and why the organization has to change. One of the things that employees raised when I was there is that when we moved from the old system, IT system, to a new one, people were operating the system on a day-to-day basis. Their views were not taken into account when the new system was developed and everything was then migrated into the system. Because the point they were raising is that there are some certain elements in the system that still exposes them as employees to fraud. And they want those things resolved. And that is why the commissioner now is working tirelessly to speak with that. A number of those things are resolved, and including getting our own system as a compensation fund, not the system that we currently using, because it's got those loopholes that even if you try to close them, we find it very difficult to do so. So there are cultural issues, organizational cultural issues that we have to deal with, and I think we are poised to deal with those issues, Chairperson. But equally, Chair, we have good people at a lower level who are dedicated to do the work that they're supposed to be doing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just touch on those issues that the DG didn't speak to. The issue of the fact that we've dealt with 5% of the issues that have been raised by the AG, what was the reason? Is it the issues around capacity or not? I think capacity is one of the two main challenges, capacity and the fact that the others are issues that are quite that require legislative and policy changes, which are the things that we're trying to address now. So those are the main reasons why the progress moved a bit slower than required. There was also a question around the fact that we're not dealing with people that are responsible for racial expenditure. I think in the annual report we indicated, for example, the number of cases that have been identified, and the DG mentioned the fact that a lot of these cases are cases that are from prior years that have been inherited and required us to go through those and investigate. And we find that in most of the cases, on the annual report we highlight the number of cases that we investigated, and we found that, for example, they were not irregular and we had to de-recognize those as not irregular expenditure, meaning we couldn't find, and also there wouldn't be any official that should be held responsible for it. And there were others where, for example, where we recommended the condonement for some of those cases because the information that could substantiate the reasons why we're saying these are irregular or not was not available, and some of the officials, for example, that would have been cited and would have been responsible would have been long left the fund. There is ongoing, because the number of cases we have on the register, we have 152 cases, and we're systematically working through those cases so that we can then, whether any of the officials in the fund that are currently still working in the fund that needs to be held to account, those will then be held to account. But in cases where, for example, we investigate and there's no official that needs to be held to account for whatever irregular expenditure that has been alerted, we'll also then make those recommendations for condonement. And it's not a problem to make available the list as was requested. Then there was also a question on, I think we clarified the issue on the slide on program 3, that was an incomplete sentence. I think it's a complete sentence. There was a question on why were the bidding processes not completed with regard to the case management system. We initially wanted to procure a system, but when we took a decision, when the department took a decision to invest in SAP licenses in November last year, we felt then that we should try and maximize the use of the licenses that we procured from SAP. And the decision taken was that we would then use the customer relationship management module within the SAP would then be used to develop the case management system for the fund, which is the project that they've started that I indicated. That project will then go live in December. I think I've touched on all the other issues too.
All your questions answered from the compensation side? Then we can go to your
They were answered under the teacher.
Members, you agree? Okay. CCMA?
Chairperson, honourable members, there are two questions that we need to respond to. The financial one on the increase on the compensation in America, it is one reason only. It is because in part-time interpreters that we have for 300 plus, who were independent contractors were incorporated in the system as employees, so that caused the change. That's the only reason. The other one has to do with the reviews. If you look at the reasons there, ordinarily, for example, you take the first bullet that says misconduct and bias. In law, it sounds like an ordinary misconduct, but it's not. This one is in terms of the challenge that the other party launches against the decision of the commissioner, alleging that the commissioner, in fact, in the conduct of the proceedings, he was biased and he committed a misconduct. It's a matter that the CCMA cannot handle. It has to be part of the review process. The one that is difficult to deal with is the one which is the second bullet, the forcing to settle issue. The biggest problem I have there is that normally settlement processes happen during the conciliation process. And in the conciliation process, there's no records, and there's no minutes, there's nothing. It's purely a confidential process that the commissioner cannot record. And whenever you receive a complaint that somebody has been forced to settle a matter, and all I ask is show me something I can work on to be able to take action. And the biggest problem is not having that. And then also reflects that there's some kind of a failure from our side to act. But we're prohibited from by law to act on such an issue. But to the extent that we're able to find evidence, we've acted on those matters. And we respond to those ones. They are exactly the same. The delaying process, that one is our problem. Either the delaying process, we take it up with the regional manager of the CCMA and ask for reasons and take the proper action where necessary. But that's essentially what it means. And the one on parties being unsatisfied with the outcome of the process, we cannot interfere in that. That's a labor court matter. It has to be dealt with at that level. And we advise parties when they raise such complaints that they must take it to the labor court. And that's how we deal with that information.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chairperson, honourable members and colleagues. I will just deal with the last question regarding internal controls and deficiencies with non-compliance of NEDLAC with its protocols. The only instance where there is this non-compliance with protocol is in the case of processing of legislation within NEDLAC. All the social partners are quite aware of our timelines, but if parties require additional time to consult either within government or within whatever constituency, we always try to accommodate everybody else because we can't just say, well, it's 6 months now, we drop everything. So that's the only non-compliance with the protocol. I'll then ask the CFO to talk to the issue of the 3.6 million rand on irregular expenditure, whether we've applied for condonation to National Treasury, and the other one on national minimum wage, which has caused over expenditure.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the comments that was raised relating to the budget on the national minimum wage. When the process started in 2014-15 financial year, I think the anticipation there was that the process were going to be completed at the beginning of the second quarter of the 2015-2016 financial year. And if you look at the expenditure of the organization during the 2014-2015 financial year, NEDLAC had a surplus in that financial year, which was also including the expenditure that was relating to the national minimum wage activities. And around that time, it was expected that those processes would be completed in July 2015. However, due to the nature of those activities, they ended up being, those dates being extended. Hence, they are still continuing, some of them even now. During 2015-16 financial year, after we noticed that these processes were not ending, they were still continuing, we started incorporating the cost pressure figures on our MTEC when we did the budget, in terms of requesting the additional funds from National Treasury that would assist NEDLAC in terms of covering the costs that are relating to the national minimum wage activity. However, due to the not having sufficient funds within Treasury, we could not get any additional funds through that request. As we speak now, we have submitted another proposal which takes into account the anticipated meetings that we still need to have during the 2017-18 financial year, which we are still in discussion with both Social Department, I mean the Department of Labour, as well as the National Treasury. Also, when we tracked the total cost of what NEDLAC has spent, specifically on the national minimum wage activities, in January 2017, we had spent about 7 million from the beginning of those processes, and the majority of that was spent during the 2016-17 financial year, which has contributed to the deficit that has been realized by the organization during the 2016-17 financial year. Hence, we have highlighted the issue of national minimum wage activities as the major contributor to the deficit of the organization. On the issue of the coordination on the mobile expenditure, we have prepared the internal documents which we will be submitting before end of September to National Treasury to get coordination on the mobile expenditure in terms of the original budget. And we expect to have that completed still before end of quarter two. Thank you.
Please just add to where is that process now? Have all these people who are supposed to sign have signed?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Yes, the agreement has been signed by all the relevant parties. We have touch wood yesterday completed almost all of the negotiations and the agreement, almost all of the issues yesterday. We just need to cross the T's and dot the I's in relationship to the draft national minimum poll, and there's still some engagement with the social partners on the issues on the national minimum wage poll, because it's in the poll. There's amendments to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act that also needs to be considered, and there is concomitant amendments to the Employment Equity Act as it relates to the work of the Employment Commission that needs to be. But the work is in advanced stage. But I just wanted to add to what the EDA has indicated in relationship to the National Minimum Wage Board. The EDA's executive director has raised this concern about the cost pressure of the national minimum wage at different levels, and also raised the Treasury. But in the tight fiscal environment, as we said, it's going to be difficult. But the social partners have indicated to the organization that for matter of such national import, that we just need to continue with the process, whether we have money or not. That's the implication. But I want to ask a question that Honorable America has asked in relationship to the continued relevance of NEDLAC within the current policy debate. And I think I wanted to just raise the issue that NEDLAC has raised within the current, only, and I'm just focusing on the current financial year, the previous financial year, indicates that NEDLAC still remains relevant within the current discussion, whether it's in relationship to the national minimum wage, whether it is in relationship to being of the rating agencies being downgraded, etc. And NEDLAC somewhat living, summit that was concluded a few days ago on Friday, talks to one of the relevant issues around and the current issues around good governance in South Africa, whether it's in state-owned enterprises, whether it's in private organizations, whether it's in unions, etc. So the organization, and I think the direct answer to the question that Honorable America has raised is whether NELEC is relevant, and the short answer to that is yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the amount that we used of the 24 that we received from UIF, we utilized 90 million, and then the balance thereof was rolled over to 2017-18. So that actually assisted us, because then when we started in May, because that was allocated there, we had something to start with. The second issue relates to post-retirement medical aid. The question is, how far is the legal opinion process? We just got the legal opinion last week. We analyzed it and we're discussing it with the board. However, it's not favoring us. So we may have to carry this spinning until we are saved by attrition.
Are we done? More questions? None. Thank you, DG. You must understand that we continue asking questions. We're not going to be happy with this status of the department and the reports of the AG. Fully aware that if you compare them with the past years, more than a decade, the reports that you get are much more better. But we want them to, we want excellence at the end of the day. So we will applaud you where you are right, and we will say it's not enough, like it's not enough, we want more. So I think you have a responsibility now to focus on what you are saying. You are going to focus on the lower levels and have a team that is ready to work. You know, a team that changes when the situation changes. Team that will engage with its leadership in a constructive way. And that's the team that will produce the best results for you. We have many questions and not happy, but we know where we come from with the department. We're not confused, but won't stop us from asking for more and asking questions. And thank you very much. So focus on the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. Again, we still want to see you how you will perfect them. You did the same last year, and fortunately this year we have an understanding because we've been working together with the AG. So check up your team to do or to implement the recommendations, and those that will be implemented in years will understand, because you'll tell, we'll see that you have moved. But you can't move, as you know. as much as you want, because it's not so easy, but at least the meeting is urgent.
Actually,